The views and opinions expressed by hosts, invited speakers, and callers do not necessarily reflect the views and opinions of the Black Talk Media Project or the Black Talk Radio Network.
Everybody got a dream. Listen to me. Everybody has a dream, but not everybody got a drive. You are where you are because of how you think. And if you were to change your thinking, you would change your world. Monday, I grind. Tuesday, I grind. Wednesday, I grind. Thursday, I grind. Friday, I grind. Saturday, I grind. Sunday, I grind. And that's why I'm here today.
Well, good evening, everybody. Welcome to another edition of BIB Radio. Today is March 31st, 2016, the last day of the month. Well, I tell you, this year is just clicking on by. I don't know what to say about that. We're already in April. Tomorrow is April 1st. We got a wonderful show today. Robert, are you on the line? I think Robert's phone is muted, but we have a wonderful show for you today. We're going to deal with the hair industry. We have a few people on the show today dealing with the hair care industry. I'm sorry, this is not Robert's line. As you know, the hair is a billion-dollar industry that Black people participate in, but on the wrong side of the spectrum. You know, everybody is in our community selling to us, and we're buying from them, but we have not taken upon ourselves to take the industry back at all. So we're going to deal with some of that tonight. Next line. Wow.
CC, can you hear me?
I can hear you now. How are you?
I'm doing fine. How are you?
Listeners know what we're talking about tonight, the hair care industry. You know, a lot of us participate in purchasing from these stores and shops that don't support our communities. What do you think about
that? I'm having a little difficult time hearing you tonight.
Oh, you can't hear me?
You're fading in and out.
Oh, my goodness. Okay. Well, let me see if I can fix that problem.
I hear you clear now.
Now you're okay. Okay. That must be my location. Well, let me just go ahead and start over really quick. So tonight we will be dealing with the hair care industry. As you all know, the hair care industry is a $1 billion industry that we don't take part in because we just haven't. We've been locked out. There's all kind of reasons why. But we're going to focus on that tonight. Again, how are you doing, Robert?
Wonderful, wonderful, beautiful day to be alive.
Okay, perfect. So I'll go ahead and read our flyer. It says, join BIB Radio for another power-packed show. Along with us tonight will be Devin Robinson, CEO of the Beauty Supply Institute. We will also speak with Tressa Elby of the Main Vendor and Deshaun Williams of Seattle, Washington, who is a licensed vendor of one of their machines. The Main Vendor is a hair extension distribution company established in 2013. The founder is master educator and stylist Marcella Ellis. The Main Vendor has merged technology with hair distribution to bring the profit of hair sales back into the salon. Their goal is to redistribute wealth by offering their licensing opportunities to savvy entrepreneurs as well as salon owners and bring convenience to the consumer by having hair on site and in stock so they don't have to wait. So we're happy that you're all joining us tonight. Again, it is March 31st, the last day of the month of March. This year is clicking on by. So we'll get right into it. Robert, what do you think about the hair care industry?
Well, I've been in business over two decades now. Entrepreneurs are always looking for that industry or that product that's going to make us $1 million or whatever. And I entertained the whole hair care industry at one point in time to find out exactly what I saw on Devin's video on YouTube, that industry, the Koreans had a lock on the industry. I'm talking from hair, from wigs to the weavable hair to the products. They literally had a lock on it. And especially, I know in this city here, I think it is a company, King's Beauty Supply, if I'm not mistaken. You had to go through them in order to get the products. I have never seen or heard of a hair trade show in the United States other than the Bronner Brothers, which is, I don't think the best to that level when I say trade show. I'm talking in that industry, but I've never seen a show, never found a show through my research that allow one as a retailer to actually go and meet manufacturers in that industry, you know, to so that they can fill their stores with the products that they want, dealing directly with manufacturers. So I'm very familiar with the difficulties that surround trying to break as a black person, especially trying to break into that industry. You know, I just left it alone. And when I saw Devin's video, I was very, very impressed with the fact I knew exactly what I was looking at. I could relate to it. And I just applaud that brother for having the vision to actually go after that market and do some of the beautiful things that he's been doing with helping black people actually break into an industry that we are the main financiers of that industry.
So right, I'm and he definitely has—he's definitely done that. But let me read a little bit of his resume. So, Devin Robinson, MBA, is a former business and economics professor, serial entrepreneur who has successfully launched almost 100 thriving businesses, over 70 beauty supply stores for himself and others, a self-help author of 8 books, a media commentator, subject matter expert on small business and entrepreneurship in urban markets, and founder of Beauty Supply Institute and program director of Beauty Supply Academy. So I'm impressed with Devin too, and that's because I first met him last year at the Power Networking event with George Frazier, which actually is in a few weeks here. Devin was a presenter, and I learned that he helps you. His company will go into a city, find the right location, and deal with all of the licensing and all of the getting the building up to code and all that. They deal with all of that stuff that people have a hard time dealing with. So I thought that was very impressive. And on top of that, of course, he's been a professor and just really an excellent entrepreneur that can really talk about building himself from the ground up. And on Facebook, he also puts out some very inspiring information. He definitely is about his business, so I'm excited to have him on, along with our other two guests. The second guest, are representatives from, a company that actually puts out a hair vending machine, which, I mean, most people didn't know that there was a hair vending machine, but it was invented by a black lady, Marcella Ellis. And the company is called The Main Vendor. And they help you to get licensed. And you become one of their distributors. And you can have your own hair vending machine. I'm not really sure exactly where they allow you to have it, but I know that they are a salon. We're going to have on Deshaun Williams he is a licensee through one main vendor or through the main vendor that I met in Seattle, Washington. Very young guy, just up and coming, a wonderful entrepreneur, he and his wife. So I'm excited to have all of our guests on tonight. And if you all want to join us, just dial in at 641-715-3660, participant code 549-032, and press pound. And if you want to be heard, press the star 6 and the number 1, and we will get you on to speak with the guest. So if you are listening by internet, if you are listening by phone, if you would like to get in queue, just go ahead and follow those directions, and we'll get you on. So, Robert, how do you feel about the hair care industry itself? Like, I mean, because we can get into many different avenues of this thing. It can be quite crazy. What do you think about, you know, because the majority of it is like what hair weaves and all this stuff. What do you think?
Well, you know, I'm personally not a big fan of the weave and all that kind of stuff. I'm a businessman, and I'm all about the money. I'm all about the bottom line, and the hair industry is a huge money making industry. So, you know, it has always been a thought in the back of my mind that, you know, these people have controlled this industry that blacks really dominate. In my opinion, we spend, I'm pretty sure we spend the most money in that industry. All the products that they sell to us as black people, you know, they make the money off of it. So, and it's just like having a manufacturer who's the wholesaler, and then he sets up a retail shop at the same time. You know, I mean, it's total domination of that industry. So, again, you know, you get somebody in like Devin. I mean, that was such a move he made on that industry. I mean, it's bigger than what people just say that he, you know, has done this with the institution is one thing, but you really have to look at the magnitude of the move that this man has made on an industry that has closed out black entrepreneurs and black business people, black vendors, black beauticians, closed us totally out of capitalizing on that money that, you know, we spend. And then here this brother come again. I applaud. That's such a huge thing that he has done for the black entrepreneur that aspires to go into the haircare business. So I'm very, very excited to formally meet the brother, talk with the brother, share, you know, some of what I've been thinking about in the last few days. I listened to him on YouTube, and I mean, he's my language all the way. Business, own it. You know, own your business, own the buildings. That's what I say. You know, so and this other guy with the vending machines, or the young lady that actually started that, you know, that's very impressive. I've never heard of a hair vending machine, but, you know, it ain't about reinventing the wheel, it's about improving on the wheel. And the vending machines have been around for a long time. Why not put her in them? I mean, so that's something I'm looking forward to also hearing about as well. So it's going to be a great show for the listening audience. I think you will definitely hang your phones up this evening with a lot to go and talk to your friends about, or the people that's in the industry that you may know. What you heard tonight will definitely give you some food for thought, and something that you could take to people that you can share with them or enlighten them. Matter of fact, tell them about the show. Tell them to call in once the show is over. They can call in tomorrow, whenever, and play the show back. Because, you know, all our shows that we air are very, very informative shows. We really want our people to be enlightened to information that is correct and real-time information. So definitely tell your people to come back. If they, if you know somebody that's in this industry and they didn't tune in tonight, they can always go back to our archives and listen to the show over again. And I suggest you listen to our shows more than one time, because it's always with information. You can hear it today, and then tomorrow you get something totally different from what you heard today. So I'm excited, to say the least.
Yep, I'm excited too, because every time I have these conversations about the hair care industry, it just takes me back to that thought of, you know, basically, how dare they? But we can't really say how dare they, meaning the people that have come into our communities to make money off of us. How dare we? How dare we not protect each other? How dare we not protect our assets and the future generations of money that our children should be having? Because those other cultures, they're just doing what they do, you know, which is make money and secure assets and wealth for their family members. So they're doing what they're supposed to do, but we are not doing what we're supposed to do.
So where there's opportunity in whatever part of a community that you live in or you frequent, you know, if you're an entrepreneurs always, wherever we go, we're looking at the possibility of money to be made. And it doesn't have a color barrier on that. See, that's the whole thing. The only color that an entrepreneur looks at is the green color on that piece of paper called a dollar. And that's the unique thing about an entrepreneur, whether he be Mexican, whether he be Jewish, whether he be Arab, whether he be Asian, Korean, or Black, you know. And it's just unfortunate for us as Black people that we have totally let our guards down, become so relaxed with going to white folks' restaurants, going to shop where white folks shop, and try to live by their standard and allow other people to come in and do for us what we would not do for ourselves. And now you hear, well, I don't like this app. Yeah, they just came over and took all of this. No, they didn't come and take nothing. They came and filled a void that we allowed them to fill, because we did not go and open up the corner store. We felt better about going and get what we thought was a secure job, and that's what we did. And so in that thinking, we left our back door open, and they just walked right through the back door. And most, I really should say, they walked right through the front door, because I mean, everywhere you go now, you see a Arab beauty supply, you see an Arab convenience store. I mean, how is that in the Black community? Not just in St. Louis, but all throughout the country, it's like that. So it's not a thing that, you know, we need to be pointing the fingers at anybody other than self. And I always say this. I always say that if you're going to point a finger, then every Sunday that you go to the church, every Sunday that you go to the synagogue, every Sunday that you go to the mosque, or whatever place of worship that you go to, if you're going to point a finger, then point the finger at the one that is leading that church, the one that is leading that mosque, that synagogue, because if they don't tell the people in the church to open up businesses, if they don't teach in the church, because they always pulling a dollar out of the poor people's pocket, if they don't teach why it's important to circulate that dollar in our own community, then they're at fault. They're the part of the blame to this problem that is existing in the Black community. So we can't point the finger outside of ourselves. We have to look within our own, first start within our own home, and each parent need to be teaching their children economics, and then we go outside our own home and we look at our community, and we have the courage enough to go and buy property and put a store in there, supply a need for our community. That's what we should be doing, you know. So
right, I definitely agree. I definitely agree.
I almost thought the choir was about to chime in for a minute.
No choir.
I was looking for the usher to pass the collection plate.
Now we're just waiting on our guests. I'm not really sure what's going on, but what we'll do right now is we'll continue, but we're going to have a commercial so I can see possibly what's going on here, because we definitely want to make sure we do not miss Mr. Devin Robinson. Okay, everyone, if you would like to call in again, even for our guests, it's 641-715-3660. Participant code is 549032 pounds. And then to be in queue, you press the star 6 and the 1. So we are going to take a little break here in just a second. And then we're going to come back and we're going to keep talking about the beauty supply industry. Let's see here. The world will soon place you and your family members under geopolitical, economic, and social unrest. Are you ready? If your answer is no, then this is the opportune time for you to become informed, aware, and prepared for soon coming events. For only $25 per month, become educated in the area of precious metals and disaster preparedness for your home and businesses. For more information, email wolf6pack1@gmail.com. Because becoming an entrepreneur is very empowering, we would also like to encourage you in firing your boss. Learn the wonderful opportunities in the Forex market. Find out more about these proven strategies at www.imarketslivinternational.com. The time has come that we become empowered instead of exploited. Most of the world's contributions have come from a Black man or Black woman. Right now is the perfect time to showcase our talents all over the planet. We are BIB Blacks in Business. Search for us on Facebook by typing in We Are BIB Blacks in Business and the name of your state or country. Join us for our new radio program every Thursday at 5 p.m. Pacific Standard Time, 6 p.m. Central Mountain Time, 7 p.m. Eastern Standard Time on www.blacktalkradionetwork.com. We are BIB Blacks in Business.
The Tando Radio Show is live on Black Talk Radio Network, Monday through Fridays at 6 o'clock p.m. Eastern. Check Black Talk Radio Network on Facebook for updates. Also, don't forget to follow Tando Radio Show on Facebook as well. Have a question or comment for the host? Give us a call at 641-715-3660. That's 641-715-3660. The participant code is 549032 pound. That's 549032 pound. To signal the host, hit star 61. Now back to Tando Radio Show on the Black Talk Radio Network.
Okay, of course, this is not Tando Radio Show. Tando Radio Show was on right before we were on. I'm still attempting to get a hold of our guest, Mr. Devin Robinson. But no sweat, we can continue talking. Robert, are you still there?
Yes, I am.
Okay, perfect. So, you know, when I was going to school originally, you know, sometimes they have you write these papers or whatever, and I chose to write a paper on the hair care industry, and it was good. It was really good because when I do my research, I do all kinds of research. I do it on YouTube. I do it in books. Sometimes it just doesn't even make sense to do it in school library books because they're not going to have the real hardcore information sometimes. So you have to really search on the internet, search scholarly articles. You have to do all kinds of stuff. the hair care industry and how many black hair care products there are, you know, we think that when we go to the store like Walmart or Sally's and we buy these products, we think that it's, you know, black owned. But there are very few black owned hair care products. And I encourage you all, if you are interested in only using products that are made by black people, you definitely need to do your research. But some of us are kind of stuck in, you know, especially as natural leasers, where we got natural hair going on. You find those couple products that work for you and you don't want to switch out. I get it. I understand it. But if you are interested in only using black products, I would encourage you to do your research and find out who the company actually is that makes your products. Because, again, there's very few. The Dudley company is still there. The Bronner Brothers are still there. There are some up-and-coming natural products out there. Even the Shea Moisture products. Let me see. Shea Moisture was wholly black-owned, but they sold out to Donald Trump or Mitt Romney. It was very weird. But obviously, they saw an opportunity in the situation, and so they, you know, dove right in. But again, you know, there aren't that many hair care products that are owned by black people. And another issue I see arising, which, I mean, kind of not an issue, but it is. You know, black women, we used to always get relaxers. But now that the natural hair movement is going, relaxer sales are actually down. So the beauty supply industry, which is everyone that is not us, is actually complaining about the sales being down of relaxers and that kind of thing. Of course, there are still women that get relaxers, but now that this movement has happened where people are concerned for their health because of the chemical compounds in the relaxer, they're not getting them anymore and they're not buying those box products anymore. So I thought that was very interesting. But anyway, yeah, so I was talking about writing this paper. There's a guy who did this whole YouTube video. And of course, we know about Chris Rock and his good hair situation, right, where he made that movie and he went over to India or wherever he went to and that kind of thing. But this guy, Aaron Rainin, he did more of a comprehensive like study on what is going on in the hair care industry and how they have, you know, black people locked out. That's a very good video. You guys should check it out. His name's Aaron Rainin, R-A-N-E-N. And I'm telling you, it's just like, it will blow you away. It'll actually make you upset. I mean, because we just don't realize, we just automatically think that we're black. We have black hair on our heads, so we must be somehow in this industry. But it's just not true. It's absolutely not true. Devin, you know, when I met him at the Power Networking seminar, I sat in on one of his seminars and he talked about how he just was bumping his head against the wall and frustrated because of the mistakes that he made trying to get in and just trying to get in alone. It just, he thought he was going to be able to just jump in and go ahead and open up beauty supplies and things, but they had him completely locked out. It just wasn't happening. So I don't know. He made a way in. And I mean, I'm just really looking forward to him telling us what that was like. So let me see. Let me try. My phone may hang up, but I hope it doesn't. But I'm going to try to call him.
Yeah. You just said something about in reference to not doing your homework as a consumer, which, you know, a lot of times that's not going to happen. Most consumers are just really just driven by impulse and they want what they want when they want it. Mm-hmm. And that's really unfortunate, because we don't know whose organization, whose movement we're funding, because we want what we want when we want it. You know, mm-hmm. You go into a beauty supply, store, there's plenty of brands on the shelf. And I've never been into a beauty supply store in the black neighborhood where I actually saw, that I can recall, white images on the products.
Mm.
So you thinking that's all marketing, like you just said, one of these presidential candidates, I've never heard that, but that's interesting. That'll be interesting to find out which one or who it is that actually owns one of these black hair care products. And I'm sure with them owning it, that the marketing strategy is definitely to keep somebody black on the cover or on the face of that product.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, so we really got to get a little a whole lot more energized to do our due diligence, because the only thing that's stopping us is one is laziness, and greater than the laziness is fear, and in this case it's more laziness than anything else. We just are people that's just a very impulsive type of people that just spend our money with whoever.
Right, right, right. Yeah, it's unfortunate. I mean, we're impulse buyers. We are. I mean,
very.
Just for instance, look at these holidays. You know, we jump up and celebrate all these holidays without even questioning anything. You know. You know, what is this about? What is this holiday about? What does it represent? What does it really represent? First of all, every month, you are encouraged to spend loads of money on nothingness, things that are going to pass away. But nobody's sitting down and just analyzing this and saying, okay, no more. Okay, you know, I need to be, doing something for my children's future. You know, that's not what we do. We run out and we keep up with the Joneses, and there's all kind of stuff that doesn't result in anything, and it's horrible.
You know, I put a post up earlier this week. I think it was a post I posted last year, and you know how Facebook share your memories or whatever. And it was a post with Malcolm. It was a video. And I reposted it without listening to it, you know. And the caption on the post was something about not begging the white man for a job. Create one. And I just reposted it because of the caption. But when I went back to listen to the video, the video was just so profound to me because this had to be like in 1963. And Malcolm stated that the black spending power in 1963 or 4, whichever year it was $20 billion at that time. And what really got me is that was in 1963 or 4. Here it is in 2016. We are at $1.3 trillion spending power. Now we talking 1960, almost 50 plus years later, and the same dialogue is going on, yet the condition of the black community, it has worsened in this economic situation for sure, especially when it comes to entrepreneurship. You know, and that just really hit home with me in the last couple of days. Especially, I listened to that yesterday, and it really caught me yesterday. I was like, wow, it's almost 50 years. I mean, it has been 50 years later, and we're still having this dialogue about us pooling resources, us spending money with outside of our reality, and yet we're out here wondering why people don't have respect for us as a people, you know, let alone we got some vicious people out here. But you know, we really have to do better by first taking care of ourselves first. Because how do you gain respect from a world that looks at you as a foolish people when you don't do for yourself what you do for other people?
Right.
And that's something that we, again, I'm very passionate about this, because it has to start. If it doesn't start at home, then we are led cheap, led to slaughter. Sheep led, easily led in the wrong direction, and hard to lead in the right direction. Now, I say easily led in the wrong direction. Who are the leaders that's leading us in the wrong direction? And that has to go back again to Black leadership, Black pastors, Black ministers or imams, anybody that's over the people in the community, and not directing the people in the community, not just to make sure that the plate is full for Sunday for the pastor or whoever to go back home and their bills are secure. I always say, if you make sure everybody around you is eating, then nobody will be suffering. Everybody will have something to contribute. But you gotta make sure that this is a message that you teach from your podium, from your rostrum, from the pulpit. It has to be something that is heard on a regular, because it is a very, very serious situation, Black economics. And we can keep on praying and all these things that we do in our whatever choice of religious belief that we want to believe in, and keep acting as if the economics is just going to change. It's not just going to change.
Right.
It has to be said. Something has to be said by those who have the most influence in the community, and it has to be said as often as you suggest prayer. You should be suggesting something do for self. You should be suggesting pooling resources. We have to do this. We're not in a situation as a group of people in America that we can afford to go any longer without suggesting this. This is something that is definitely a 911, a must, because eventually what we're going to do is play ourselves right out of the total economic scheme of this thing if we're not careful. And that's my opinion, you know. So I'm very, very, very skeptical about the future of Black America the way it is going, because I just don't see the push from where it needs to be coming from.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
I don't, you know, I attended a mosque here in St. Louis, and I've never really ever heard do for self, and the teachings of the Honorable Elijah Muhammad, that was the one thing that really attracted me to the teachings. I grew up poor in North St. Louis and in Jennings, Missouri. I grew up we didn't have much, you know, mm-hmm. So out of not having much, I desired much. And when I heard Minister Farrakhan say that the Black man and woman must do something for self, that stuck with me. That really hit home with me, you know. And he said, whenever you go to work or whatever you do for the white man, then you study that, and then you take from that and create yourself a job. So those type of things for me was very impressionable upon my mind due to my situation. Now, I heard that from Minister Farrakhan, who's not here locally. But locally, I didn't hear that.
Okay.
And everybody, it seemed like everyone, not everyone, but majority of the people were working a job. And it really seemed like doing for self, whether it be church, whether it be mosque, is not the suggested thing to do.
Well, let's answer one of our questions. We got somebody at 704 that would like to chime in. Go ahead, 704.
Yeah, can you hear me?
Yes. Hi, Scotty.
Hi. Hi, this is Scotty. And that's Robert, right? That's your name?
Yes, sir.
Hey, Brother Robert, this is Scotty.
Hey, Scotty.
Look, I don't disagree with anything that you said except for, and I've heard it a lot. We do, first of all, what I do agree with what you said, that we need to be doing more for self and that we need to be being entrepreneurial and providing jobs for our people. Everybody ain't cut out to be an entrepreneur or to be a creator. You know what I'm saying? Just everybody is not blessed with that. Some people are just, you know, laborers or whatnot, but they'll work hard for you. So yeah, we want to be employing our people, but I hear this a lot. I live around white people and have lived around them for most of my life. I live in a deep South redneck community in North Carolina, and a lot of times we tend to mythologize or act like these people are doing so much better than us, and they really are not. They are not entrepreneurs like that. I mean, really, it's like 1%. I mean, I hate to borrow that phrase from Occupy, but they right, though. It's like, you know, top 10% of wealth earners in this country. All of that wealth is up there. That's why Trump got so many people coming out to hear him, all right, because he's speaking, you know, poor white trash to them, and he know that they ain't got no jobs. That's why they talking about TPP. Man, these people are all on welfare. They're on EBT. Just, man, it the only difference is the setting. You know, we got grass where in the urban areas where most of our people congregate, they got sidewalks, concrete. You know what I'm saying? And if I would recommend anything, and I heard Minister Farrakhan talk about, you know, this, and I think they got like a little, some farmland that they trying to develop in South Carolina or Georgia, somewhere like that. But, you know, going to the things that Tando Radio Show focuses on from time to time, survival, if the grid goes down, if the financial system collapse, our people being in these urban cities is in the wrong place. You can't even grow food. You can't, you know what I'm saying? You can't hunt to even feed yourself. Now, that's the difference with the white people in the rural community. That's why they got a lot of guns and stuff, not just for protection, but for hunting and whatnot. And so, but I just want to say that they, you know, I've gone to their junior high schools. I've gone to their high schools. I've gone to their community college, you know, always around white people, man, and they, you know, are not like something to be, you know, at like all white people think on the same level, or they, you know, dominating and this and that. No, they struggling just like the rest of our people, man. And, you know, they pretty much getting the same education as our people. The problem is education in this country, in my opinion. So I just want to say these white people depend on somebody to give them a job. A lot of them just out of work now. You know, my daughter was working at the local truck manufacturing plant that employed about 5,000 people. You know, people coming from Charlotte, everywhere, you know, to work at this place. Good benefits, all that. They didn't shut that down. Now it's closed down, you know. And that had been around for like 30, as long as I can remember. Now it's gone. It's gone. You know, thankfully, my daughter, you know, got other skills, and she quickly found her another employment and whatnot while she work on her entrepreneurial thing. But man, these white people is doing bad, and we seeing that in you know, how many of them behind Trump. So that's all I want to say. I don't disagree with, you know, I'm down for everything y'all talk about on Black in Business Radio, but I'm just hearing not, you know, just tonight, but man, these white people are not white supremacists. They just racist. You know, white supremacists got power, resources. There's very few of them. You know what I'm saying? And these white folks out here is doing just as bad as black folks, in my opinion.
It's not even a conversation piece for me about them, because they're not the focus of the black community for me.
But when we dog out the black community and act like they're so much stupider or not doing something, as opposed to what white people, that's the implication, that white people are on the ball, they getting their thing going, and black people just sitting around ain't doing nothing. That's like not true. It's not true. So that's my only focus.
Right. Well, I mean,
that we don't dog out our people, man, when we know they ain't being taught right and being fed the same thing. It's up to us to uplift them, man, and not dog them out. But that's all.
Well,
thank you for what y'all do, though.
The point that I'm making, though, is that whenever we have leadership that is not, that's only leading the people to the pulpit, well, not to the pulpit, but to the offering plate, and not really giving them instructions or directions that's going to help build the inner city. You know what I'm saying? Or wherever we're trying to do.
That's why we got to turn them on to programs like Black in Business Radio, so that they get in a different programming. Yeah. So it is on us who know to do our outreach, and not just online, but also. So that's on us, too. Us leaders who are not in those positions you're talking about, I feel like we have to do better at reaching the masses, because the masses are being misled like you're talking about. But y'all have a great rest of the evening. Thank you for what you do and the information y'all share.
Yeah. Now, you know, one thing that I've learned over the 21 years I've been an entrepreneur, and I've done a few, going up to the schools and talking to the students. And I remember I was invited to speak at local high school, Beaumont High School. Sister Jamila Nasheed was there. Brother Kabir was there. Brother had a non-for-profit dealing with the youth. Brother Ghazi Muhammad was there. And these are some people that Sister Jamila, she's in the local government here. Ghazi is a very well-spoken brother, come out of penitentiary, very, very sharp brother, just very studied brother, and invited me out to speak. And I was thinking, how am I going to follow up behind these eloquent speakers in front of these high school students? And the thought hit me, go in your pocket and pull out that money and ask these children how many would like to learn how to create cash flow or income for themselves. And when I did that, the whole auditorium erupted. Everybody they wanted to know me then. And so what you're saying is true. If we're in the community as entrepreneurs, that means that as entrepreneurs, we're in a community with time that we control. We're out here, we can talk to the youth, we can pay the youth to do certain things, we can teach the youth to why you move a certain way, you move in business, and by being in that position, that makes us leaders in the community. And I tell any entrepreneur that you are a role model, because you are an exception to the rule. We are the minority when it comes to our people. You know, there's not as many of us out here doing what we're doing as it is those that are employed by other people. So definitely we are the leaders. And I definitely encourage, when I talk to entrepreneurs, I'm encouraging them to teach someone else your trade, your skill, or whatever it is that you have. Don't do them like I was done. I went to a guy, and the first thing he told me was, the game is to be sold and not to be told. But I was not the one. I'm the wrong person to tell that to, because when I want to know, I'm going to know. But no, you know, so this thing with us, it's really not about making white folks seem like they got it going on, because they don't. They have mastered certain fields of endeavor based off of taking the information and applying it, the mathematical formula. Yes, they've reaped the benefit of that. But as a whole, no, it's the same situation with them as it is with us. It's not a majority of entrepreneurs that are white. A lot of white folks work a job too. So I get what you're saying, but that's not what I'm trying to do at all. Because I just know that as black people, we have a different set of circumstances that we're working from. They didn't have to go through integration. They didn't have that on their mind. They didn't have that forced on them. When we were thriving as a people, you know, controlling our own economics, and they saw us rising. They saw, you know, coming up with wealth. And that was the problem, that they didn't want to see that happen. So they ended that. They got a little wiser and suggested, no, let's let them eat at our table. And that's the problem that we have in the black community today. Not that we dumb. We just got to get back to the root of the problem and address it. We got so many people that just want to be with white folks now. We think it is wrong to have our own. Well, that's racism. No, it's not racism. In the negative, you know, it's not. It's a good thing for us to have our own. Chinese people have their own community. Italians over in South St. Louis, there's a Bebo Mill area where all the Italians meet up and do their thing. You know, you got Koreans that have their own thing. Well, we have to come back to some form, some plain level field, to where we can learn how to get along and get ahead. You know, we got work to do, but if we don't work with each other, then nobody else will. And that's just the bottom line. Nobody else will, and we gotta love each other enough to help each other. And in the process, when I say love each other enough, it's real easy. See, white folks don't have to tell black folks to spend money with them. White folks ain't got to do that. It's black people. We get black people. I can honestly say I made a lot of money off of black people. But when you look at the scale of $1.3 trillion a year, well, I may have made $89,000 or $80-some thousand in 1 year. Well, that's not a lot. That's a small drop in the bucket compared to that $1.3 trillion that's being spent throughout the year with people other than ourselves. So definitely, we got work to do, but if we keep on talking about it, and we do a little bit more than talking, though, we have to encourage opening up businesses, whether they be brick and mortar, whether they be internet based, and we have to encourage from those places that we love to gather, whether it be black radio, whether it be at some big convention. We have to teach every time we get a chance the reason why we should circulate our black dollar, and the reason why we should open up and operate businesses. And, you know, once we can get that part, then there's a time. I heard you mention about the dollar falling. Yeah, well, that time is going to come. But if we don't, maybe that may be something that will force us to have some unity. I don't know. But right now, today,
it's a dire need for us to come together and at least get on one accord, or try to get on one accord, or strive to get on one accord in reference to supporting Black businesses and on a greater level, and not only supporting, but opening up more Black businesses in urban areas. Anywhere that we are, we need to have Black representation.
Oh, wait, I'm sorry, Robert, we have a caller. I think this may be our guest. One moment. Oh, they just went away. Wow. Okay, I'm sorry. Everyone listening, dial in at 641-715-3660. Participant code 549-032, pound, and then to get in to the queue, star 6 and 1. If that was our guest, please call back.
Please.
Right. I mean, our next guest is going to be coming in, and I'm like eating, sorry as I'm you, but our next guest will be coming in like 15 minutes, no, 15 minutes or less. I think that was Devin Robinson. I don't know. I mean, I'm just hoping it was Devin Robinson. But yeah, Devin Robinson, if that was you, call back in at 601-715-3660. Participant code 549-032, press pound after that. And to get into the queue, press star 6 and the number 1. Not really sure who that was. And how long they were holding on, I just don't know. Now, somebody is down here in the queue. Who is that? Yeah, hold on just a second. Welcome to BIB Radio. Who do we have on the line? Oh, wow. Okay. Everybody in queue is hanging up. So. I don't know what's going on tonight. That person, if you would like to dial in again, dial in at 641-715.
Hello? CC, I don't know if you know, but we can't hear you.
Okay, I'm back. There's a lot of weird stuff going on. Yeah, I'm back. Anyways, I don't know who that was, but continue on. You were saying. Go ahead.
Well, you know, it is what it is. You know, this format here, when we came up with the BIB radio, actually came from BIB, Blacks in Business, and the root of BIB, Blacks in Business, it almost was B-O-B, Black-owned business, but instead of saying Black-owned business, being in business myself, I thought about that, and I said, no, I don't want to separate myself or put a color or ethnic denomination on being in business. Being a Black-owned business, I had reasons for not going there, and so I decided to say we're Blacks in business. Business has many different cultures and many different ethnic groups participate in the business industry. So, but the thing that really was on my mind with BIB was to actually educate those who are interested in going into business, those who may be not sure about what needs to be done or what am I going to be faced with. I wanted to mainly, and a lot of the times we don't talk about business as it pertains to your domestic lifestyle, because the business is very strenuous. So these are things that, for me as a business person, I always listen to other businessmen. Russell Simmons, had a chance to meet him personally in Las Vegas at the Magic show I was attending, and had a very, very good conversation with Russell Simmons. And, you know, and you don't get the personal side of how business can affect your domestic life, And that's something that was always on my mind about, you know, if I ever wrote a book or whatever, that would be a lot of the subject matter that I would cover, what type of woman that an entrepreneur, or what type of man that a female entrepreneur would most likely have a greater chance of having success with in their own personal relationships. These are the things that are so unexpected, or so very seldom, at least to my knowledge, talked about. And these are subject matters that we're definitely going to get involved in on BIB Radio, now that we have this format available to us. And so the whole BIB is just something that I wanted to be able to give our people in real time the information, correct information that they need, trade show information. A lot of times we go into business out of an ideal or a desire, and we have more desire than what we have accurate information. And through my experience, I think the creator for allowing me to think the way that I think, because I early on in my business career, whatever, I early on was blessed to come up with to be able to go to a huge trade show, which literally changed the way that I thought about business. Prior to the trade show, I was dealing with wholesalers here locally. And that's what most of the guys that I knew that was in the streets hustling goods, they would go right downtown and they would go to the local wholesaler. And you could only buy what these Asians thought, or these Koreans thought that was hip for the inner city. I was so fortunate to get wind of this huge clothing show, jumped on a plane, flew to Las Vegas, and I'm telling you, the manufacturers, when they saw me coming and with the excitement that I came, a lot of them was laughing at me. A lot of people who go to these shows that knew these people, they were like, this got to be your first time here, because I was like a kid in a candy shop. And I was so overwhelmed because of this information that I was looking at and was hearing. I knew that most of the black entrepreneurs that was back home did not know this information. So when I got back, I brought extra directories back, and I would talk to the people, share the directories with them. And then it got to a point to where I started saying, I don't think they want to go. They want to know. I think I couldn't get people to really get up and get a plane ticket and go to this Las Vegas show. So I kept on going, and I went from that show to a general merchandise show. I went from a general merchandise show, ASD, to a furniture show in Mississippi. When I went to the furniture show, it blew my mind as well.
You've been to Mississippi?
Oh, yeah. There's a Tupelo, Mississippi. There's a really huge furniture expo down there. Really huge. Anybody in the furniture business, if they in the furniture business for real, would know about the Tupelo show. And now you in Las Vegas, Vegas just built a 20-story facility that now they're trying to entertain the furniture industry to come to Las Vegas. And I've been in the building. And when I tell you, they have some really nice furniture. They have some really nice furniture in there. So, yeah, but I went down to Tupelo, Mississippi on several occasions and went to the trade show down there just to expose myself to the information. I think we bought a bedroom set down there. But I wanted to get more exposed to the whole notion of dealing with manufacturers rather than wholesalers, because manufacturers make a person like me a wholesaler. I may not buy in the volume that a wholesaler buy in, but I still can buy cheap enough to where I can compete with the wholesaler here in the city by taking my goods or that information, go to the local flea market, set a booth up in the flea market. You got in your local flea markets, you may have 120 different entrepreneurs and one up under one roof. Now, you got 120 different entrepreneurs up under one roof, and you got direct manufacturing information, that puts you way ahead of everybody. If nobody's going to the trade shows in that marketplace, now you become the guy or the woman. And
right.
You know, so these are things that I started seeing by going to these shows. I never would see us at these shows. Now, we were at the Magic Show because we love fashion. We love fashion. So we're at the Magic Show, but I'm going to tell you like this. The blacks that you saw at the Magic Shows were a lot of your rappers because they started a clothing line, and a lot of their entourage was there. You saw a lot of your local clothing store owners for that particular area, whatever. A lot of the guys that's been in the business for a long time, they will attend those shows. But on the whole, like, for instance, the Consumer Electronics Show, which is in January of every year, huge industry. And I went there, I've been there quite a few times. And as I would go looking for that unique product. But mainly I was going because I'm looking like, where are we in these industries? Where are black people in these industries? So now the burden is on me. I'm like, okay, I need to tell people about these shows because I see a lot of us are doing entrepreneurial things, but we're not at these shows that give us the best price. And you can go to Las Vegas. People, you can go to Las Vegas for 4 nights, 3 days, airfare for up under $600. You in Vegas, you at the trade show. The trade show, you can get on the internet, you know, you can call me, but you can go to the trade show, register for the trade show. You need a tax ID number, business card, lots of business cards, because you're going to meet a lot of different manufacturers. And once you register for that show, all you need to do, there's no fee to register for a trade show. And then the next thing you need to do is book your vacation package, is what I do all the time. And it'll run you about, at the very most, I've paid about $600. I've gone to Vegas, same 4 nights, 3 days, for as cheap as $300. So,
okay. Well, look. So we're talking about trade shows. Let's spiral it back into hair here. but I did look up hair trade shows. I Googled it. So there is one called IBS Las Vegas International Beauty Show. It is June 25th through the 27th, 2016, at the Las Vegas Convention Center. And it says Yep, registration open, save up to $30 when you register by May 23rd. And it says, what happens in beauty happens in Vegas. And it says, elevate your career at IBSLV. Join more than 21,000 salon owners, managers, and beauty professionals eager to build their career and increase their skills at IBS Las Vegas. More than 350 exhibitors line the show floor, from new business to veteran industry leaders. IBS Las Vegas delivers the most innovative companies in one exhibit hall. A carefully curated educational program with 100 plus free classes. Now, I was a hairdresser, so 100 plus free classes, that is big, okay? And in-depth hands-on workshops and master classes is designed each year to help sharpen talents and hone techniques. In 2016, we welcomed back wildly popular competitions such as Major League Barber, Last Words, and Nail Pro. Stay tuned for more information on this year's show. So they have a link where you can stay connected. Competition, well, there's a lot of, I don't know, my little thing just messed up, but it talks about competition, hair, barber focus, hair, color, techniques and trends. Let's see, master classes, makeup and artistry and income, men's grooming, product focus, the art of nails, the business side of beauty, main stage. So there's a lot of categories in this trade show, the IBS Las Vegas trade show, June 25th through the 27th. I suggest that if you are interested in the hair industry, or you are in the hair industry or the beauty industry itself, that you go to that, because apparently Robert is telling us that trade shows are all the rage when you're in business. I mean, myself, I have never been to a trade show. Not that I know of. I've been to a lot of things, but I don't think I've been to a trade show. I guess I would know if I went to a trade show, right, Robert? Yes, I would know.
Yeah, so, you would know, because you would have to have some comfortable shoes.
Okay. Well, I mean, I've been to a lot of things, because I just end up places. Like now, I'm here. You know, I end up a lot of places.
So, right, right.
I don't think that I've been to a trade show. Now, I have been to one of these large hair shows. Matter of fact, that's what got me to Seattle, because when I was in Alaska, I was a hairdresser. And then I decided to go to Seattle to a hair show. And this was like a very, very big deal. It wasn't a, quote, black hair show, but it was a hair show. And anybody that does hair knows that you are trained on something other than black hair. So all of that information that I was receiving at that hair show was very valuable, because that was the type of hair that we were trained to do. Of course, I knew how to do other hair too. I knew how to do black hair. I knew how to do everybody's hair. But to become more skilled at doing Caucasian or straight hair was just, you know, what you should be doing. You should know how to do everyone's hair. So I encourage everybody to, you know, get in there, you know, get in these trade shows. You know, again, we're talking about the hair industry today. And, you know, you could just Google hair trade shows. That's what I did. And I came up with that IBS. And you have plenty of time to still buy your ticket. I mean, I would definitely go about that. As I'm looking, shoot, there's a couple of them on here. Let's see. 2015 Ubiquitous Hair and Health Trade Show. Now, that sounds interesting. A hair and health trade show. What does that look like? Let's open it up. It says, oh, wait, this is 2016. We're not in 2015. Didn't I make that mistake last week? It was in 2014. But the page is still opening up, so they very well may have the 2016 information on this website. So I'm just waiting for it to open up. But I love hair shows. I think they are just so fascinating, because, of course, they're doing hair, but they put on a show for you to be entertained, and it's excellent. I'm looking forward to going to a trade show. You know, I don't know when that will be, but yeah, I mean, just as much exposure that you could get into these things would really help you as a business owner, because a lot of times we get so busy and overwhelmed with our financing and trying to run the business, we forget to get out and get educated. We forget to go out and sharpen our tools. Therefore, we end up getting discouraged, depressed, and we hate it, and, you know, end up going back to the 9-to-5, which you don't want to do that.
The overhead and going into business, whatever business you go into, you know, you really got to have a strategic plan to lower that overhead. Some people are just blessed with a thriving business. That's not everybody. Everybody's not going to come into that. So I would definitely suggest that when you go into a business, that you look into finding you a piece of property that you can own and operate a business out of it, for sure. You know, because now you can control your bottom line, which is what you need to be trying to do. When you live, like, for instance, where I'm at right now, I live upstairs over a storefront. And, you know, when I get this storefront up and going, if I want to rent it or if I want to run a business, well, that's like killing two birds with one stone. You know, and an entrepreneur definitely is the type of person that needs a commercial/residential type of living dwelling, so that you can, you know, run your business. You can live there. Now, a lot of people will say, don't live where you do business at. Well, I mean, that's an emotional thing. I say, personally, I feel it's the best way to have it because, A, all your investment is up under you. And there's nothing better than being right above your investment, you know. B, you're always there. You can protect it. It's a lot of benefits. I don't have to leave here and go to a whole nother mortgage or a rent. And that's usually what kills businesses. You know, they get into these leases where right away, you, regardless of what happened, that landlord is going to want his money. You know, give you a idea of what I'm saying. My mortgage is like $849, but I have a living dwelling and I have a storefront dwelling. Now, if I wanted to rent out my storefront, I can rent the storefront out for $850 comfortably, and I'm living upstairs literally mortgage free. Now, but if I want to run a business downstairs, then I can still lease that space out to my business and let my business pay me, my LLC, and then that pays the mortgage. So I don't have to worry about having two notes to pay, because if I was living somewhere else, I would pay a rent or a mortgage note there as well as here. So now we're talking maybe $17,000 to $18,000 to $2,000 a month. So
wow.
That's an excellent idea. Yeah, you just have to. We have to approach it from a. At least this has worked for me. Approaching it from a where I don't have the money perspective.
We have some. Thank you. One minute, hold on.
Go ahead.
Welcome to the MB Radio.
Hello, this is Professor Devin Robinson.
Oh my goodness. Hi, Professor Robinson. How are you?
Not bad, not bad.
Okay, well, let's get into it. So, of course, I know you from Power Networking. We have Robert on the line. Robert, this is Professor Robinson.
How you doing, sir?
Great. How are you, Robert?
I'm doing great. I've looked at some of your YouTube videos. Man, I must say, I'm very, very, very glad to make your acquaintance, and I have to salute you, brother. I mean, you took on an industry that, it's been tough for blacks to get in. As I stated earlier, I've been in business for over 20 years, and I approached the hair industry, and I immediately knew that I wasn't about to tie my time up dealing with people that's controlling that market the way that the Koreans had controlled the market. So when I found out about what you had done, I know personally is nothing small by no means at all. That is a huge thing that you're doing with black entrepreneurs, getting them into the hair care business. That's a huge thing that you did, brother. And I just want to applaud you and salute you as a brother.
I appreciate that. You know, the work is hard, the trench is deep, but you know, there are just some elements of doing business that if we continue to be strategic, you know, we're gonna win. You know what I'm saying? It's not a casual fight. It's a deliberate fight. You know, we can't, you know, just, you know, go at this without a real strategy and a real mission to win. And expect to win, because these, you know, we're going up against migrants from their own country and people that are entrepreneur spirited. So they've right. been training for business, you know what I'm saying? And to leave their own countries to come somewhere else, that takes another element of risk and guts. So it's almost like they're the talented 10th of their people, and they're in our country, you know, stripping our communities of economic power. So in order for us to really battle against them, we can't be casual with this thing. We got to educate consumers. We got to train entrepreneurs. We got to make sure that we're doing all the right things and making the right steps to make sure that we win.
Right. Yeah, I heard you. I want to ask you, I mean, I saw on the video where you said a guy, you went to a Asian beauty supply and you was about to spend a couple of thousand, 3,000 or whatever on supplies, and the guy followed you around. I think you said maybe he was threatening you in some kind of way, thought that you was in there trying to steal or whatever. And I can almost, I've been in that situation with a wholesaler here in St. Louis where they're going to make me purchase something that they arranged in the wrong way, and it fell and broke and told me I had to pay for it or I could not come back in their wholesale business. So I told them I'm not going to pay for it, and they told me I couldn't come back in. And I left out of there with such a anger, you know, and that anger is what drove me to go to the trade shows. And I for the longest have not had to go down to that wholesaler to buy anything, because now I have the direct contact information. So what did that moment do for you to make you attack that industry the way you did?
I mean, that example, that situation you gave is so egregious, because especially at the wholesale level, you know, sometimes at the retail level, they have those, you know, those rules or policies, you break it, you buy it, which I think, right, is still a little excessive for a regular shopper, especially. But, you know, you see that at the retail level. But at the wholesale level, I don't think I've ever seen anything like that, because they're making so much money and selling in so much bulk that to, right, break something, I don't care if it's their most expensive piece of product in there, that's a drop in the bucket to the type of money that they make on a daily basis. So that right, has more motives or hidden agenda behind you just breaking something. It's almost like you were being targeted to find a way to have you not be able to shop there anymore. You know what I'm saying? That's just, you don't see stuff like that. But for me, I mean, when that situation happened with me, I was, you know, I tell people all the time, I'm a world traveler, and I'm in a lot of different countries, and when I'm in these different countries, I feel the racism even in different countries, even outside of America. And to feel that type of way when you're shopping locally, you're a business professional, right, you know, you think you're at home and you're about to spend a whole lot of money with someone, to me, it intensifies it. You know what I'm saying? Because, you know, like I said, I tell people all the time, I said, you know, you don't really know how people really feel about black people until you leave from away from black people, right, in your community, and really start traveling and getting out to different places. You really then start to see how the world, not just America, the world thinks about, you know, black people. And to me, it's just, you know, a lot of unfair stereotypes and stigmas that's attached to us that, you know, just from the whole idea of you know, the Africa and how Africa is seen in the global society, I guess is what I'm saying. So to be in my own neighborhood and for that to happen from someone who came to my country, doing business in my community, you don't even live there, you're extracting money from my community and going elsewhere and keeping that and circulating it and investing it and pushing your kids through college and generating tax revenues and stuff in your community, to me, it's utter disrespect. And what really moved me to take a stance, because I'm not a cosmetologist, I'm not a beautician, but what really moved me to take a stance in that position was because thinking about the people who were stuck in that community and had to shop with that store, because, right, I could get in my car and take off and go 50 miles west, east, north, and go shop somewhere else. But I was thinking about the people, and there's a bus stop right in front of that store. And I'm just thinking about the people who, they get off the bus, they go shop with them, they walk home to the apartment or their houses or whatever's in the area. And I'm like, they're almost like trapped. It's like a concrete jungle. And that's what really motivated me to say, I want to do my part. I wasn't trying to do my part on the level that I'm doing it now. That this wasn't even a thought for me. I just felt like something happened to me. I was disrespected. I'm going to do something and be part of the solution. I'm not going to just jump on the phone later that evening and start complaining to a friend or a family member. I'm going to do something about it. And once I got in and I started my first store, there was just a tidal wave of support. I consider myself a great businessman. So my stores are being ran very well. And so many people started asking for help in them opening their own store and how I did it. And it became kind of distracting from me running my businesses, sitting down trying to help other people. So, you know, I wound up with 3 stores in a year and a half, and I had my barbershop, my salon, and people were just knocking on my doors, like constantly wanting help. And so then I just said, well, let me sit down and create an actual organization that is structured, that people can get help in a way where it doesn't take me too far off from running my own businesses on a day-to-day basis. So that's how that whole thing happened. And then next thing I know, the floodgates came in. We're doing conferences. We're actually 2 days ago, we opened our 80th store in Texas. By the end of the year, we should be over 100. And I just didn't expect it to go this far. I really just thought I was solving a problem for the people in that community and for myself.
Yeah. Wait a minute. You said 80th store, Devin. I am looking at this CD that I listened to today, and on the back of it, it says over 70. So you have climbed quite aggressively since this DVD or this CD that you made.
yeah.
My goodness.
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah, we've been operating at the rate of a store a month for the past couple of years, but coming to the later part of last year, we really stepped it up, and we're doing like 2 and 3 at a time.
Oh my goodness!
So the numbers are just increasing. The better we get at opening them, the more success that I'm bringing to people. You know, the more people are stepping up to the plate and opening stores. And you know, some of them we own, some of them we help other people. You know, we're just aggressively trying to get the stores open and really teach people the essence of entrepreneurship, because the store is, you know, like I tell people, it's 85% business and 15% beauty business. So mm-hmm. We really have to teach people retailing, supply chain management, inventory management, you know, carrying costs, dealing with taxes and payrolling, and you know, fixed expenses, the variables, and how you really compensate yourself and your staff, and leadership of a staff, recruiting. It's a lot of business elements that are in there that what we really teach people that's really making them successful. And then, you know, the other 15% is now we're telling them about, well, this is how you get distributor accounts in this mm-hmm. business dealing with these Asians. And this is how the type of relationship you want to have with them, how you deal with them, how you talk to them, how you posture yourself with them. Then these products, what products you want to have, where you want to have them, what goes with what, how you upsell, how you cross sell. Then we go into that part, and people are doing well in their stores.
Well, that is excellent. So, you know, to some of us, it would still seem unattainable. Because we are, well, a lot of us, as I was listening to your CD today, you know, we're used to operating at a certain level, or we're used to the example that we've been given by our parents, you know, and if our parents were not entrepreneurs, that's not something that would be automatically in us. So, we would have to be that type of person that is really ready to get into this, versus just reflecting back and living how our parents lived. How would you say that we could get past that that place where our parents were. If we want to be an entrepreneur, how do we take the bull by the horns and just do this instead of trying to stick with this 9-to-5 situation? We know it's not working for us, and we know we want to be an entrepreneur, but we walk in fear a little bit. How will we get past that?
I'm going to tell you, you know, for the people that come through our Urban Business Institute and our entrepreneurship program, we really push people to the edge. We push them to their limits because there's a culture in our community. And one of the things that we help people shift away from is the hustler mindset, because there's a difference between a hustler and an enterpriser. And in our community, it's not that we aren't interested in business or interested in having our own or doing our own or having additional income, that type of stuff, or being inventive or creative or innovative, but we're doing it with a hustler culture. And that hustler culture worked, you know, 30, 40 years ago. It worked because people were not interested in doing business in our communities. So the level that we were operating on, we could get by with that because, you know, no one was really coming in to extract that money from us. But as companies started to move in, the competition became higher. I mean, let's just look at Sally Beauty Supply. That's a $4 billion company. They're in our community. Operate on a hustler mindset, competing against a Sally and think we're going to win. So we try to teach people how to shift away from that and become enterprises. Now, it's easier said than done, because when you come up in a certain environment or you're raised a certain way and you have a certain culture, over time that culture becomes the norm. So what we're asking people of our community is to forget what you've been taught. That's not the norm that you want. And there's a resistance there. Like, what do you mean? If I don't do this, I'm not me. I'm not of my community and I'm not Black. Why do I have to operate like another way? Well, we're trying to say you have to, because globalization and technology is killing us. And if we don't raise our bar and we're able to go and shop with a Sally's or shop fairly because of desegregation with other companies, you have to make sure that your business elevates to the same competitive level as those other businesses, or else we're going to lose. So I think that it's a whole paradigm shift that we have to have the discussion that, and you can't have excuses. You can't open late. You can't be dealing with every customer as if they're your friend and on a personal level, and not give them the level of professionalism that they can get from across the street and expect them to keep coming to you. Now, we may be able to attract and keep a certain population of those people, but what we're doing is we're disqualifying the other people. So if you're operating as a hustler, you will only get customers that will accept the hustler behavior. You know what I'm saying? Mm-hmm. Those that are mainstream and those that are wanting a somewhat of a cryptic, more experience where it just feels very professional and not almost like friend level, you know what I'm saying? Until we can digest that as the people that's behind the register, we're going to continue to see problems and only get a small piece of the pie. We can instantly change our communities overnight. I waged a 1-week boycott in 2009 of non-Black beauty supply stores. That's $750 million in a week that we can get if we just say, you know what, I'm not shopping at a non-Black beauty supply store this week. That's just one of the businesses and one of the industries. We have a $1 trillion spending power. We're putting $400 million in tithes in Black churches every week. And on Monday morning, those churches are taking that money and putting it into white banks. You know what I'm saying?
Right.
It's a problem that we're seeing that we're not really consciously thinking about, because we're thinking everyone's playing fair, and they're not. And the most successful Black-owned bank in America generates $84 million a year. Meanwhile, the most successful Asian-owned bank is generating $30 billion per year. And Black population is higher than the Asian population. So these numbers are, it's just a matter of us taking a shift understanding enterprising. And one of the things I talk about as well is black people got to be willing to work for other black owned businesses. We got to stop just going to the highest bidder, because we go to the highest bidder and we ruin our community because we're selfishly thinking instead of saying, I'm going to work for this black company, bring my talents and expertise there. Even if I'm a college graduate and I can get into corporate, let me use my intellectual capacity here, help build this company, maybe become a senior executive one day, make this company competitive, and then get the salary later on. Let's just delay my gratification in order to help build our community. But all these are behavioral things that we have a gap in. And we continue to operate on a hustler mindset. So we got to go from hustler to enterpriser in order to see the change that we want to see. And it starts with us.
Absolutely. Well, I think that that was a mouthful that you said, because obviously we have more than one problem. It's not just this problem or that problem. We have to get down to the root of what is really destroying us as a people. With that being said, we know that you have the Beauty Supply Institute. And one of your students, or your soon-to-be student, Mr. Deshaun Williams is on the line. I'm going to let him in. He is a young guy that I met in Seattle, Washington, and I'm just so proud of him because he is now a vendor of a vending machine by the main vendor. He's licensed by them, and his vending machine sells hair. So I'm going to let him come on, and I think he may have a few questions for you. Hi, Deshaun. How are you?
How are you doing today, Cece?
Wonderful. Devin, meet Deshaun. Devin, meet Deshaun. Deshaun, meet Devin. And Deshaun, meet Robert. Okay, we're all connected now.
Hey.
How you doing?
How you doing, Robin? How you doing, Professor right. Devin? I've been following you and keeping up with you through looking at your website and also getting emails from you guys as far as for opening a beauty supply store and stuff like that. And I look at that, like Cece was saying, as the next step or phase into what I would like to do as far as moving forward, as like you guys was talking about earlier, you know, building an enterprise and leaving a legacy for my kids from when they, you know, reach the age to where they don't have to depend on the corporate world, but they can, you know, be self-sufficient themselves as far as being entrepreneurs and owning their own businesses and stuff like that. And I've been, like I said, I've been keeping up over the years. And I think within the next, I would say, 6 months to a year, I think that would be the next best investment for me and my family as far as the beauty supply store, because in Seattle, there's not many of them here, I would say, in the Pacific Northwest area. And right off the top of my head, I can only think of one that I know of. And like you said before, the Asian community is really dominating the market, and I feel that know it's time for us to step up and enter our stuff into that mainstream or that market.
Yeah, you know, I mean, what you're doing is definitely the way to go. You know, I read an article earlier today that showed the top 10 cities, the top 10 best cities for black entrepreneurship. And when I looked at the cities, it kind of infuriated me a little bit, because it almost felt like these were the cities that they wanted black people to stay in. You know what I'm saying? And it was, they were all like saturated in the South. And it was almost like, what are they trying to say? You know what I'm saying? Because black people, from what I've experienced, we're all over this country. And when we start to send messages like that, like, well, you guys just stay contained to the South, or stay contained to these popular-esque cities and just leave the rest of the country to us. That's what I felt like the message was saying. Like, it's kind of sending a subliminal message that this is where you guys belong and we'll take care of the rest. And I was saying the same thing. There's so many cities out here. I mean, we've opened a lot of stores in smaller towns and overlooked places that are you never see on the travel channel or the music videos. And it's a whole slew of black people in those towns. And I'm like, I never knew about this place. And we get calls every day about cities like that. And it kind of opened my mind to say, you know what? Yeah, there is 40 something million people in this country. We got to be sprinkled through other states than Georgia and Mississippi and, you know, Alabama. Like, come on, we're in other places. So, you know, I tell people the statistics. In order for a beauty supply store to do well, you only need about 1,500 to 2,000 customers. That's it. So if you have a market that has the opportunity to attract that number of customer, you will do well. All you got to do is make sure that you keep them coming back. You know what I'm saying? So the average customer shops with a beauty supply store 22 times per year. And, you know, studies have shown that. So if you got, let's just say, to keep the numbers even, 2,000 people, that's 44,000 transactions in a year. Out of those 44,000 transactions, if they only spend $20, which we know people spend more than that, but research shows conservatively that the numbers are from $12 to $20 per transaction average, that's $880,000 a year. Your rent's not going to be that much for, you know, for a lot of the decent places. Let's just say if you even go to a real expensive place like LA or New York, the rents that we've seen is, let's just say, $5,000 a month. That's $60,000 a year. $60,000 out of $880,000, that's the bulk of your money outside of the other things you control, such as payroll. And then you have the variable cost that you got to, you know, work on and keep down. But people don't understand that the overhead and stuff is not that crazy. And breaking down those numbers that I just said, it works out to be, let's just say, roughly 30 to 40 customers a day. So it's not like you need a whole lot of customers on the other hand. So a customer every 10 minutes, every 15 minutes, you do well. I'm not speaking from theory or hypothetically. I'm speaking from experience. I opened my first store almost 12 years ago, and I'm still in the business, still doing well, and still teaching people how to do entrepreneurship. So just continue plugging away, and you know, once you select the right market and you got the people there for it, and you run a good business and you're disciplined with your cash, you will succeed and you will wind up leaving that legacy.
Okay, we have another question here. Let me let them on. Welcome to BIB Radio. Who do we have? Hello. Okay, that person has to fix their line because we can't hear them. With that being said, Devin, where do you plan on going for your next location?
We're going to be in Baltimore next week.
Okay.
Next, I think the team heads out. They head out, I think, next Wednesday.
Okay, Baltimore.
And after that, we got a bunch of locations lined up. But from my knowledge, Baltimore's next.
Well, that's exciting. So we kind of talked around the Beauty Supply Institute. So if I am a listener and I'm sitting back and I'm listening to you and I'm like, wow, this guy really knows his stuff. I would love to learn from him. What avenues do you have for people to get more information from you? How would they check into the Beauty Supply Institute? What do I need to do for you to come and analyze my city to tell me if my city is a good place to open a supply?
Yeah, it's very easy. We have multiple options for people just based on their business experience, what level of help that they want from us, how far along in the process they are. It really just varies. So we have the Beauty Supply Academy. People can come to Atlanta once a month and train with us for 6 months. We have where people actually hire us to come out. Like you just said, you call the office and we come out and look at your location. We know we have a matrix that we use to determine if it's a good location. And our locations haven't filled yet. Any location we've picked. If for people that are kind of just thinking about it, they can go to our website, beautysupplyinstitute.com, and order like materials. They can order the book for $25 or the system for $200. And that at least gives them like a great, overview and some insight to the industry for them to determine if it's something that they can do or would like to do. I have a team of people. We have like, I think I got about 15 people working in Beauty Supply Institute. So it's not like I'm a one man show. I'm the messenger. Like I tell them in our staff meetings, I said, listen, you guys are the deliverers. You're the ones that are delivering on these quality services. I'm really the messenger and the leader of the team. So we have people that are spread out everywhere. I mean, these guys actually go to these places without me. I don't get there till like the end just to make sure everything was done properly, but I have a team of people that's traveling every week putting these stores together.
Okay. That's definitely good to know. So they would go to,
Cece, I have another question.
For
the professor. My question would be, what is the difference between like the online program of the elite member program compared to actually going to the summer or the winter conference as far as what they offer?
Okay, so the Capstone Elite, what you're talking about, that's a membership group of people that we have. We capped it at 250 people. And what they get is they come to two conferences for free. We participate in strategic calls every month. They get a series of online classes for free, and they get a lifetime discount on anything they do with us from there on out. And it's an application process you got to go through. The conference is a one-day event of six classes. So I really do like the conference because the beauty of the conference is we bring a bunch of people from across the country and across the world. We've had people travel from as far as Switzerland to come to our conference. And you're really in the building with like-minded people. And I think that's just a unique situation where you have a bunch of people that would all like to start the same business. So you get to network with each other. You get to know who's where, what challenges they may have or what resources they may have. And it gives you a great opportunity to just connect with other people. But it's one day of classes. Important classes. I can say things at the conference that I'm not at liberty to say when I'm on stage or in certain media. So I can really get in a little deeper in the conference. And then on the second day, we go on a bus tour where I take everyone to distributors, and I have relationships with these distributors where you get to tour the facility. Now, as someone coming off the street that does not own a store, you can't even get past the front door. They don't let you in the front door. But when we bring them, we take them all through the back and all through the intimate areas where only store owners are. And we always get stares every year from the store owners that are in the building because they're like, well, how are these people in the building? But it's because I formed these relationships to make that happen. So that's the difference between the two. The academy is like the conference, but it's ongoing. So instead of six classes for the conference, you get 26 classes in the academy, which lasts for 6 months. And then at the end of the academy, you wind up with a business plan so you can get your funding. And we've turned a lot of students into store owners as well from the academy. So they're just different levels of training needs. We do have online classes as well that you can take. But, you know, the thing with the online classes, like it's convenient, of course, you're training from your house, but the synergy is not there where you are shoulder to shoulder with other people in the room trying to open stores. But for some people, it works because it's convenient where you don't have to travel to Atlanta to attend our academy.
Wow. Okay. Well, that is excellent. Deshaun, did he answer your question?
Yes, he did. Like I said, I've been following and, you know, reading and doing that type of stuff. And that was one of the questions I always had. What was the difference between doing the online classes to, you know, to better yourself and then actually go into conference. So he answered my question.
Perfect. Okay. So, Devin, let everyone know again how they can reach you, because we're going to go ahead and get on to the next guest who's on the line. Caller 281, you are there. You're open. Your line is open. So, Devin, let them know how they can get a hold of you or the Institute one more time.
Yeah, Beauty Supply Institute, just our name.com. Our conference is beautysupplyconference.com. Anyone in the world can type in or Google how to open a beauty supply store. We come up. If you have trouble remembering our website, our domain name, how to open a beauty supply store. Or you can give us a call, 404-551-4398. Our office is unmanned Monday through Friday, 9:30 to 5 Eastern Standard Time. You know, we have a full team that's ready with open arms to help people trying to get into this business. So you're not chasing me on email or cell phone or whatever. We have an actual infrastructure there for people that are ready Monday through Friday, 9:30 to 5 p.m.
Perfect. Well, thank you so much for joining us tonight, Devin. I look forward to working with you again later. Guests, if you would like to get more information, contact the Beauty Supply Institute so you can find out how to open your own beauty supply and get lots of business information and tips that you never knew that you needed. Thank you again, Professor Robinson. We will talk to you again soon, okay?
Thanks for having me.
Thank you.
All right.
Okay, so Deshaun, we still have you on the line, sir. And we want you to talk about your endeavor here with the main vendor. Let's see, we have Tressa on the line. Tressa, are you there?
Yes, ma'am, I'm here.
Oh, how are you doing? Thank you for being so patient. My goodness. Oh,
I'm good. I'm excellent. How are you?
Oh man, it's been a long night, but we're good. I, again, am so happy that you joined us with Deshaun. So I'll let you open up and let us know about Main Vendor. What is the Main Vendor?
The Main Vendor is actually the first hair extension vending machine company in the world. It is owned by Marcella Ellis. She's the founder. And the whole point of it is merging technology with the hair extension distribution industry and just really automating it and really kind of in a sense having a much smaller form of a beauty supply that you can as an owner, buy as many as you want and place them where they're needed, to make a long story short. And my whole goal was to also just kind of try to put that profit of the hair extensions and give that a little bit back to the salons as well in our industry. So everyone involved in the Main Vendor is we're industry professionals. And I'm sorry, that answer was way too long. But that's the Main Vendor.
No, ma'am. We need long-winded answers because this is brand new information. So the more information, I feel, is the better for our listeners. So, no, you are absolutely fine. Now, who invented this vending machine?
So, Marcella Ellis is the brain behind it. And we make custom vending machines, basically. And they're smart technology machines to just automate the whole process of selling hair in the salon. And as a stylist, and she's a master stylist and also a cosmetology school owner, a salon owner. And as a stylist, and I'm also a licensed cosmetologist as well, licensed stylist, you don't want to stop what you're doing to make deals on hair and barter. Yeah. And barter and can you get 2 for $3 and can I get 4 for $5 and you need to be able to look at the samples, touch it, mm-hmm. feel it, and walk over to the machine, swipe your card, it accepts Google Pay, Apple Wallet, whatever, get your hair and sit in the chair. So just really a one-stop shop, so just really just adding the technology to it and just making it convenient for the customer, for stylists, you know, and for places that don't have beauty supply stores readily available. And it's open to the public for anyone to invest in.
Now, wait a minute. Now, did you just, was this you guys' slogan, or did you know you just made that up? Get your hair and sit in a chair?
You know, I've been saying that for a very long time. Okay. You know, I have lots of slogans, a whole lot of them. I happen to also be a stand-up comedian. So, but I'm trying to, you know, try to keep that out of it. But, you know, women and hair, it's funny. I mean, it is. And I even said, I honestly don't understand why anybody would sell illegal drugs. Just the hair, there's enough hair to sell for everyone. Hair.
You know what the funniest thing to me is? Let me tell you, the funniest thing to me is I have been in many a parking lot and I see a tumbleweed going by. A tumbleweed going by.
Yes. I have seen that as well. And not only have I seen people selling hair in parking lots in the back of cars. So we kind of want to stop that. You know, I mean, you have to do what you have to do, but we really want a personalized service, something just very easy and quick and, you know, quality that will last a long time, you know, and really just provide that convenience for the customer and you know, give that inventory, I mean, that money, some of that money to the salons too as well, because a lot of stylists don't want to deal with hair. They don't want to deal with it. And so you're telling someone, okay, go here and go to this beauty supply that may be really inconvenient for the person. If it's next door, fine. If it's next door, then that is a good relationship that could be made between a salon and a beauty supply store, such as the gentleman was talking about earlier. Beauty supply stores are still needed. They always will be. You know, and there should be more African Americans owning them. Absolutely. This is just another option. This is another venue. This is another additive to the things that we can do. It doesn't count each other out. But you're telling someone to go to this place. Now, if it's inconvenient, you have given that money to the supply. You know, and in most cases, it's not going to be an African-owned beauty supply. But that's what we're trying to change. And that will change going forward. But, and there's nothing wrong with anybody, whatever race you are. It doesn't matter. However, realize what's already in your community and take the money and spread it and share it. Absolutely. So what we do, we have three ways to get involved in being a part of the main vendor. I mean, you could be a host and, you know, we'll find someone like Deshaun who, well, I'm sorry, Deshaun, you'll give you a chance to talk. I'm sorry. I'm long-winded. But we'll find someone like Deshaun, and we'll place the machine there. He is the business mind behind it. It is still his business. And we place it there, and then you get the commission, and you get free online classes, the extension classes. Or you're like Deshaun, and you own one of them, or two of them, or 10, or whatever it is that you like. They can be placed in salons. They could be placed in, if you can get an airport to step one, you could do that. Whatever it is that you want to do. But the primary idea, though, was to help to give back to salons. But an owner can place the machine wherever they find.
Okay. So if I'm interested in this opportunity, what would I do? Where would I go? Who would I call?
You would go to themainvendor.com or you would call me at 855-626-3836 extension 3. We'll talk. We'll schedule an interview between our board with you as well and have you apply to become a licensed the main vendor.
Okay. Well, that sounds very promising.
The main vendor.com.
Okay, so yes. Deshaun, let's tie you into this conversation. How did you get involved with the main vendor?
I got involved with the main vendor due to the fact that about 4 years ago, my wife, she was looking for some hair for a televised commercial that she wanted to that she was going to be featuring for her employer. And we couldn't find any hair within our neighborhood or whatever the case may be. So she had to drive about, I would say, 15 to 20 miles out just to find some hair in general for that she needed to do, because there wasn't no, I would say, a black-owned beauty supply that she wanted to go to close.
Mm-hmm.
So that sparked something in me. You know, I was reading like Black Enterprise, and then I was watched the movie Black Hair. Then it sparked something in me to like, oh, well, this might be a great opportunity for us to be able to invest, like you said before, in our own community to bring, you know, black businesses back, and then reform Eve's Glory LLC. And then later on, you know, with like Tressa was saying that, you know, going to the different salons and stuff like that, it was like kind of sort of inconvenient. And I was like, it must be a better way to get the product out there, to get the hair out there. So I did some more research, and that's when I came across the main vendor. And I read everything about him and stuff like that. And I felt that it was a good fit for us due to the fact that the job that I was with, I was a field service technician that worked on vending machines. And with having a business, having a side business with selling hair, I felt that the marriage was perfect to have the business of the hair and my technical background of the vending machine. So to me, that was a match made perfect. So then I reached out to the main vendor, and I met over the phone Tressa and Marcella, and then we talked, and then I talked to the wife, we prayed about it and stuff like that, and then I'm like, let's take a chance, took the money out of, you know, the 401k, and became a licensee of the main vendor. And it's been about almost 2 years now that we've been doing it, and I would say that the model and the concept of it have been proven. You know, from myself seeing in my own eyes, from going from a saturated online trying to sell hair business to placing the actual machine in a hair salon place, and the differences as far as profit wise is outstanding. Going, I would say about 200% increase. I would say just how the machine in an actual spot or salon, to where a person who needs the hair at that point of time, they could just walk up to it, buy the product, and, you know, not have to go anywhere, but just back to their seat to get their hair done. So I would say that it's been right now wonderful for me and my wife, I would say.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Well, I was very surprised to meet someone I'm not trying to insult you, but so young that is so entrepreneurial and wanted to take their game to the next level. I mean, that's why I reached out to you, because I'm like, man, I gotta have him on the show, because he definitely knows what he's doing already at this early age. And I so appreciate, you know, what you're doing for your family. I think that is so excellent to be so forward thinking.
Thank you. And I'm the type of person that try to think outside of the box. You know, you want to be the caboose of the train. You don't want to be ran over by the train. So that's one of the things that I always keep in mind, that, you know, you always want to move forward or have forward thinking, because technology and everything that's around you always changing. And with, like Tressa was saying earlier, you know, combining hair with technology and how the world is moving, that everything is technical or in a technical or technology, I would say now, that, you know, for those who's looking for a way to invest their money, I think that it would be a great idea for them if, you know, they're trying to take their business or their game, like you said, to the next level.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Well, that's excellent. So we got to get ready. We got to get... Sorry. I'm being reminded of the time. I know what time it is. Thank you. We got to get ready to wrap up this show. We went a little bit over because I did not want to rush you all. Tressa, thank you. You are so sweet. I got to have you back on this show. We will make a show just about comedians, just for you.
Okay. No, I'm
so serious. You are my girl. But anyway, Sean, thank you so much. I will see you when I get back home so we can talk. Thank you, Mr. Devin Robinson. You all have been wonderful guests. I so appreciate you. I will have you back on. When you have something else to report, feel free to give me a call and we'll have you on. Robert, any last words so we can wrap it up in just 5 minutes? Can't hear you.
Oh, me, Deshaun. I'm sorry.
No, Deshaun, Robert.
No, I just said thank you again, everybody, for coming on the show tonight. We enjoyed you, and hopefully the listening audience learned a lot and came away going away with some great ideas and some art inspired to do something for self.
All right. Well, thank you, everyone, and have a wonderful night. This has been VIB. Join us next week. Good night.
Good night.
Everybody got a dream. Listen to me. Everybody has a dream, but not everybody got a drive. You are where you are because of how you think. And if you were to change your thinking, you would change your world. Monday, I cry. Tuesday, I cry. Wednesday, I cry. Thursday, I cry. Friday, I cry. Saturday, I cry. Sunday, I cry. And that's why I'm here today. And listen to me, your problem is you're not grinding. You're not grinding. You're taking days off. Hear me. Hear me well. I want you to know that there are many of you who are not where you're supposed to be. Not because you don't have what it takes to get there. You are not where you're supposed to be. Because your dreams and your grind are not congruent. Your dreams are big. Your dreams are gigantic. And your grind is small. And I need you to do me a favor. I would prefer your dream be small and your grind be big. Because if your grind is big, you can have, you can do, and you can be whatever you want to be. Everybody got a dream. I'm gonna keep it 100 with you. You are where you are because of how you think. Information changes situations. Knowledge is the new money. Get you some.
Mercedes-Benz begins a journey into the automotive future where cars are no longer mere transport vehicles but have finally become mobile living spaces.
gotten an invitation to speak on Wall Street. Not for $250,000, not for $25,000, not for $2. They had